Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Off Speed Podcast, the show where we slow down, take a look at sports stories and different sports from around the world. My name is Grace Leader. I am your host, and I am delighted to be with you today. Been a interesting few weeks in sports. A few weeks ago, we had Nick Pollock of Pitcher List on. We talked about the art of pitching in the modern day. And since then, opening day has happened. There is baseball on my television almost every night. I am quite happily enjoying watching the Blue Jays play. And they are playing rather well, I would say, as of this recording. They're not quite to the top of the AL East standings, but you know, good enough, close, near the top. It's been fun. The AL East certainly has been fun, very competitive. Every team above 500, except for the Baltimore Orioles, which is to be expected. The Los Angeles Angels actually doing fairly well. It's my dream to have Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani in the playoffs. My dream that also happens alongside the Toronto Blue Jays winning a World Series again. But yeah, Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, you know, arguably the first and second best player in the world today. Just let them play some playoff games. A series would be nice. That would be great. The Mets seem to be, doing rather well. Jacob DeGrom injured, unfortunately. Max Scherzer looked like he might miss some time, but he has actually been on the field, pitched a fair bit, decently well. And the rest of the rotation holding it together as well, currently leading the NL East. So that's good. The NL West looking, competitive again. The Dodgers out to an early lead. But you have the Rockies, Padres, Giants, all above 500, the Diamondbacks. Much like the Orioles, as to be expected, living in the basement of the NL West. So been a very fun start to the season. Gosh, the thing I love about baseball so much, I feel like on any given day, anything can happen. I watch a lot of my baseball through the old Instagram these days. I was, saw Sean Murphy get hit in the pit in the butt by a pitch. Very memorable Instagram that went around. Brett Phillips was a position player pitching for the Tampa Bay Rays. Caught a pop out like from the mound to right in front of the dugout. Really fun. Baseball is so fun. I know people might think it's slow and boring, but I just love it. It means summer's here. Summer is on the way, I guess. That snowed a few days ago. One of my favorite times of the year this year, with baseball season underway. But you also get, the NHL is close to wrapping up. A handful of games left for teams before the NHL playoffs will actually start. I'm a little bit worried about Toronto's matchup. They're going to play probably Tampa Bay. At least it's not Boston. A handful of teams still fighting in the West, the Las Vegas Golden Knights, Vancouver and Winnipeg, all, some points away. Winnipeg probably not incredibly likely, but Vancouver and Vegas still have a chance. Meanwhile, the entire Eastern Conference, at least the eight teams, are set whether the seeding stays the same. Again, apologies if I talk too much about Toronto specific sports, but very exciting to see Austin Matthews score his 50th goal within his 50th game. That is super exciting. Steph, we'll see if the Maple Leafs, meet me in about 2 months when I'll be heartbroken that the Toronto Maple Leafs have once again lost in the playoffs. The NBA playoffs underway, another exciting reason for it to be spring. Been some fun games pretty early on. Phoenix Suns, the number one seed in the West, dropped a game to the New Orleans Pelicans. They should be able to pull out the win there. Golden State beating the Nuggets 2-0. As I speak currently, the Raptors are playing the Philadelphia 76ers. They are without Scottie Barnes, so little bit unlikely to see how they can win. Miami, I think an interesting story. Kyle Lowry joining their team, the number one seed, should be able to beat Atlanta fairly easily. Actually, kind of all the Eastern Conference matchups kind of seem like the higher seed is going to take it. But yeah, we are just freshly underway of the 2022 NBA playoffs. So exciting times in American sports. No football on, but hockey, baseball, and basketball all underway. I'm a big soccer fan as well, European football. So in the English Premier League, we are ramping up for an exciting final. Manchester City and Liverpool tied their game, their Premier League game a little while ago to let Man City be 1 point ahead of Liverpool. Chelsea far out of it. They will be contenders in the Champions League, but the race between Man City and Liverpool is on and should be extremely fun to watch. Liverpool ended up beating Manchester City in the FA Cup semifinal to head to the finals. Gives them a little bit of momentum, although ultimately in the Premier League, that does not mean much. So we'll see. Very exciting times there. So lots happening in the world of sports. The NFL draft upcoming. NFL legend Marshawn Lynch, he became a part owner of the Seattle Kraken, which is kind of fun, staying in the city of Seattle, supporting some of the other sports that are happening there. If you haven't checked it out, check out the Instagram story or the video of him getting to do donuts on the ice. That was extremely, extremely fun. So it's been a fun spring. Today, I'm very excited. We're going to be joined by the host of Crime Scene, Mari Forth, and Sarah Carradine to chat about an episode of the Netflix series Bad Sport, which talks about sports scandals. Today's episode, one very near and dear to my heart, at least a story involving the 2002 Salt Lake City Olympic Games, in which the figure skating competition was mirrored in controversy. Some judging, some poor judging, perhaps some judges that were influenced to score the Russians over the Canadians. So we watched that. We watched episode 4 of Bad Sport. That is the episode. It's called Gold War. So if you have not watched yet before you're tuning this in, you do not need to watch the episode. We will walk you through the entire scandal. But if you're interested, you could check that out. It's on Netflix. Bad Sport, episode 4, Gold War, all about the 2002 figure skating scandal. Figure skating scandals, not uncommon, as we saw. There was one in Beijing this year with the Russian figure skater who perhaps was taking some substance that was banned. So felt like it was a little timely, and I'm, as I say, a self-absorbed Canadian who just wants to talk about things that are Canadian. This episode very much, there's a lot of Canadian pride in the episode. When we get to the interview, I actually did not say this in the interview with Sarah and Mari, but the episode does kind of allude to this idea of like America versus Russia, even though it's Canada against Russia, this idea of East versus West, which I thought was an interesting take for the documentary to take. Feels more about perhaps Russia wanting to make sure that they would continue to be dominant in figure skating, but rather than some disagreement or rivalry with Canada or North America specifically. But we get into it. We'll recap the episode and chat about the scandal, a very interesting episode. So when we return, we'll be back with Mari and Sarah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
And we're back. I am joined by the hosts of Crime Scene, Sarah and Mari. Sarah, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm podcasting today from the lands of the Stony Creek Nation here in beautiful Launceston, Tasmania. How are you?
I am doing wonderful. Mari, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm here to talk some bad sport.
So. Bad sport.
I'm excited.
Bad sport.
Yeah, I'm very excited. This is a sort of a unique episode of the Offspeed podcast. We're going to recap some TV. I mean, I watch all my sports on TV or my phone or whatever, but sort of a documentary version. I love documentaries.
Me too.
They're so fun. They're so good. And this series, I did not venture into the rest of the episodes. We picked one episode here today that I picked for very personal, selfish reasons. it's mostly about Canadian pride. But I was like itching to watch the rest of them as soon as I finished watching.
Well,
this one episode.
Once we talk about this episode, everybody, the listeners, can go over to our next Crime Scene episode that drops, and we'll go in a little bit more detail to not only this episode, but a few more episodes of Bad Sport. So, Grace, once we're done with this, once you go watch the additional episodes, you can then go listen to us talk about them.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's such an excellent series, Bad Sport on Netflix, and it ranges over various sports and the badnesses that are happening with them. No murders, but certainly some very unpleasant goings on.
Yeah, so we talked about episode 4, which is Gold War. What a name. That's very good. Very punny. I very much like it. The 2002 Winter Olympics figure skating scandal, which, as somebody who lived in Canada in 2002, this was a really big deal. This was huge. I don't know. Did it for either of you? Were you aware of this figure skating scandal before you watched the episode of Bad Sport?
So, no, I was kind of, I think I said on one of our other podcasts, but like for the 2002 Winter Games, for us, we were still reeling from September 11th.
Yeah.
So a lot and again, it was the first time the Olympics had came back to the U.S. since I think Atlanta in 96, which also had a terrorism aspect to it. So when the funny thing is, I was flying unaccompanied for my first time ever, and my flight landed in Salt Lake City during the Winter Olympics.
Whoa.
And I just remember this was when they had completely upped the security, and we landed and they had like, they brought dogs on, they brought all sorts of stuff on. Me and my brother were just sitting there like two unaccompanied minors, like, what is happening? And it just never, like, the figure skating aspect of it never really reached me because first off, I was young.
Yes.
And in America, we were just kind of focused on ourselves, to be quite honest, at that point.
Yeah. Did it hit Australian news waves at all, Sarah?
Oh, look, I'm sure it did. I was blissfully unaware of all these goings on. It's interesting, a couple of the other documentaries, the cricketing scandal in particular, brought memories flooding back because of course Australia is a great cricketing nation, so we knew all about Hansi Kronje, and Mari and I'll talk about that later. We're not big figure skaters.
No.
not a lot of ice. Not a lot of ice.
Winter games in particular. We play
tennis. We sail. We
you won two medals in this Olympics. I couldn't tell you who what they were in, but I do see the table. Australia won two medals, two gold medals.
Some species of skiing or
probably or speed skating. Or, there's always Australians in speed skating. Yeah, maybe.
Well, we have the most the one of famous, the most famous gold medals in the world in speed skating. So
He was on Survivor, on Australian Survivor, right?
Steve Bradbury.
Yes, he's the guy where the people fell, right? And he glided across the finish line. That's his.
Yeah, and they fell in his semifinal as well. Wow. So when he was accused of you just kind of hung back and got a gold medal, he said, no, it was all completely strategic. I knew they would all fall over each other. So in a six-person final, he was last the entire way. And then the top five fell over each other and he stayed.
Oh, my God.
It's pretty incredible. It's really amazing. Yeah. Figure skating at the 2002 Winter Olympics. The 2002 Winter Olympics, for me, I would have been like 11 at the time. So I'm kind of like right at the age where like, I'm in school. So I feel like there was a lot of pride about this particular Olympics, especially as a Canadian. Canada won both, I believe in men's hockey and women's hockey won the gold, which was a really great moment. I believe there's rumors that like, the Canadians managed to hide a loonie under the center ice, which, I think irked maybe some of the other competitors, especially the Americans, that we had snuck a loony under the ice. But some believe that was superstition and that's how we won the gold medal. So this was like, I feel like a highly watched, you know, especially the North American aspect of it. It's like this, you know, we recently had the Olympics on and in Beijing. And just like the timing, right, is like was the weird part where like you kind of wake up and you're watching the stuff from before. But when it's in North America, all the timing is like pretty much perfect to watch in prime time. So especially as like an 11-year-old. And then on top of that, my mom in particular is a very big figure skating fan. So I feel like, figure skating was on a lot, in my household. This scandal. So basically, as the show, shows, Russia has been very dominant in pairs figure skating for at this point, 40 years. They've never lost.
Years. That's extraordinary. That is such a they have time. Not lost a gold in 40 years. Incredible.
Wow.
Incredible. Yeah. Part of sort of the like Russian, you know, story, the success story is to just load up with gold medals, particularly in Winter Olympics. Show that they're like superior.
Yeah.
Pretty smart. Pretty great.
I mean, it's an extraordinary idea. You take these, young children, as we see, the skater who wins the gold, she is a very young girl when she's spotted and taken away to be under the coaching of Tamara Moskvina, who is the most wonderful narrator, perhaps not very reliable. We see Tamara in her heyday. We also see her today, where she denies that any impropriety happened. She offers her hand to be cut off if any cheating is detected. And she's a sort of fierce coach that, you know, the kids absolutely adored because they wanted to work. I think it's part of the culture. And she seems to be very affectionate towards them. She drives them hard, but she's extremely affectionate and loving. So she's not that cold. Do what I say, coach, and walk away. And the other extraordinary thing about the Russians is they have the ballet background.
Right.
So they have a very strong ballet background. So there's an incredible lyrical quality to it. And as our wonderful Canadian skater says, the Canadians were much more in the physicality and athletic side. And herein lies the tale, right? Because it's not you jumped this far, it's measurable. You ran this quickly, it's measurable. Mm-hmm. In figure skating, it's a sport, but there is a subjective score given by very experienced judges. If somebody falls down, that's unequivocal, but their opinions are what the scandal relies on, if I have it right.
No, that's totally right. I think the idea that, the idea here, I think, in the defense of some of these judges is that, the Russians might have, you know, slipped slightly, not even like majorly, but if their routine is harder to pull off, then that should be worth more than someone doing an easier routine
subject that you pulled off perfectly. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, from what little I know about gymnastics, that's how gymnastics is. But I do want to just point out one thing about Tamara that I really liked was when she was talking about how, like, she's like, Russia does not kill people if they don't win gold medals. Like, the way she said that had me cracking up. She's like, I know that's what y'all think, but that's not what happens. And I think she showed like a lot of loving that Sarah had said, or tenderness towards her charges. When we heard about Elena, the Russian figure skater, the woman who was in a pairing with another guy named Oleg, who was apparently very harsh and aggressive to her, and he used to like hit her. And then during they were practicing parallel spins, and his skate pierced her skull and sent fragments into her brain, and to the point where they thought Elena wasn't ever going to skate again. So I really liked that. I loved how this documentary showed you the parallel journeys of both the Canadian para skaters and the Russian para skaters, because Elena could have just not even made it to this Olympics, because she could have not even ever walked again. But to not only walk again, skate again, find a partner and an Anton in order to make a run for the gold is just an amazing story. And I'm glad they at least got to talk about that part before we got to the scandal of it all, you know?
I agree too, because there's something that the documentaries does, I think, quite well, is that, there is this lingering question about whether, the Russian skaters ever knew that that there was, this judging scandal, whether they were ever looped in or not. The documentary does not make declare a definitive statement that yes, there was proof, or no, that they did not know. And so I think because of that, I think they do a good job here of not necessarily trying to make it seem, it would be very easy to say, Russia bad, Canada good. That's the story. And I think that what makes it more intriguing is somebody like Elena, who from a very young age was trying to be a figure skater, goes through, turmoils of being a professional athlete. People joke about wouldn't it be great, my dream job to be a professional athlete. Like, it is still very, very hard thing to do. It's interesting that I thought, Sarah, that Tamara comes off as is known as this beloved Russian figure skating coach. Cause from the doc, I did do some reading. Apparently she is that sort of is her reputation. The documentary, I don't know whether that is fully the impression that I got. I feel like if anybody gets painted a little bit in the especially, I think it mostly comes from the defending of there was no scandal.
She gives herself away in the now. She is very unequivocal. She offers her hand to be cut off. She says people aren't killed if they don't get gold medals. And as soon as she says it, I thought, oh, I'd never thought that, but now I think it, because she said it happened. No.
That's a American thing that we all thought. So yeah. I'm not surprised. Yeah.
In the photographs and in the back in the day footage, I saw her as a very loving and warm and supportive while being strict. And she also is not fond of Oleg, who, presumably was an excellent skater, but because he was unpleasant and violent towards his partner, I think for Tamara, that doesn't do at all.
But also I feel like it was her choice eventually to be I'm going to skate with somebody else rather than Tamara, this coach, being I almost feel like if it was working, even though he was abusive, that she might, I don't think she comes off great in this.
Really?
I don't think so.
Maybe it'd be. I watched it twice.
I also watched it twice.
I guess it just matters. I don't think that she came off like a Russian boogeyman for sure. And I truly don't think once we get into the scandal, I truly don't think that any of the Russian the skaters or her knew anything about the fixing. I mean, honestly,
She might have known. Not the skaters.
I like that. Okay,
let's get into it. We haven't mentioned
Jamie Saleh and David Pelletier, who are the Canadians. And yes, I don't think the documentary takes sides, but somehow they are heroic because they were the ones that were robbed. So it's not really, I mean, obviously, if you're Canadian, you're on their side. But as you watch the documentary, Jamie and David are the ones whose side you're on, because they feel that they were robbed of this gold medal that was rightfully theirs. And the documentary certainly leans us in that direction.
Yeah. So James Lee and David Peltier, like, have Canadian household names. Maybe people would disagree. Maybe that's just the leader household name. But two of the most famous Canadian figure skaters of all time, particularly because of this performance. Like, they, you know, the idea that they would have dethroned most likely, you know, this 40-year run of the Russians, and the fact that they, you know, they are a couple. There's another couple. I'm really struggling to forget their name. They're a more recent, like, very successful pairs figure skating a couple, and that was always the thing with them. It's like, oh, are they a couple? And they're not. And then they like have other partners, and I feel like there is this weird thing that we're doing, like, it shouldn't matter, but it does matter, because it, like, we're like, oh, they're skating in their love, and the documentary does this as well, shows us this. So you know, they both had partners that, you know, were not working, and they eventually find each other, and they're incredible, they're really great, and leads up to the 2002 Winter Games. There is a little bit of a, you know, a note in here before the or an event before the actual performances, in which Soleil and Anton run into each other on the ice in practice, which there's some suggestion that perhaps maybe that was on purpose. I think the only person who says that is the Soleil and Peltier's agent. So I don't know. I think on the replay, I think it does look like an accident. And I almost think that it looks like Jamie runs into Anton. She's the one looking away. So, you know, anyway, interesting. Yeah.
That was one of the parts that I rewound it every time I watched. Like, I had to watch it like over and over again, because I'm like, it truly just looked like they honestly collided. But I wish that we had seen, because the shot that they really focus in on the documentary is basically right before they collide, a second before they actually collide. I really wish we could have seen the footage like a little bit further before the collision. You know what I'm saying? To see what the trajectories were that concluded in the collision. I would have loved to see that.
Yeah, I mean, Jamie herself, she says something like, oh, I could see them out of the corner of my eye, and I expected them to take this particular route. So I don't think it's deliberate. I think it's just, it adds to the sort of the salacious feeling of it. But I think it was just one of those things that happened. She fell, she was taken away, she was shaken, but she eventually could skate, apparently unharmed.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and it's in there, and you can kind of like play around with it a little bit. But I think ultimately, in my opinion, it seems like neither of them are fault. And I certainly don't think that Jamie Soleil is like intentionally running into Anton. So I feel like it's a mistake.
Very swiftly goes to pick her up. I mean, you just like an absolute automatic reaction.
The couple I was thinking of is Tessa Virtue and Scott Moir. I don't know if either, but they're the most decorated figure skaters in Olympic history. Eventually become quite the duo, Virtue and Moir, in Canadian history. So yeah, we've had some big name figure skaters in Canada. But the Russians perform first. They do their performance. As I say, it's a very, like, you know, ballet-esque, this very artistic piece. There are a couple, they say kind of two mistakes, with one in particular being when Anton does a spin and sort of lands a little bit funky.
Yeah,
they sort of finish their performance, and they get rated very highly. You know, people are saying, even the jurors are saying, yeah, the scores probably mostly match up with what they did. Those are, like, you know, gold medal performing, and it's a very, very good performance. Even though there are some mistakes, it feels like perhaps the mistakes aren't maybe taken fully into account, but probably overall it's not, you know, that far off. Seems to be at least what the documentary tells us.
Seemed like the argument was between, was it a mistake or was it just small details like that were missed? You know, it was like, was it three main mistakes or was it small details that were messed up?
Tamara says it's details. I mean, the interesting thing, because the audience there very, it seems to me, because of their reaction, are extremely erudite and understand figure skating, because when he makes the slip, they make a noise. It's a noise that Jamie and David actually hear backstage. They're not watching. They're deliberately not watching. But she clocks it and she says, oh, they've made a mistake. So the Canadian judge, Benoit Lavoie, he says it's three mistakes, but it looks like it's that one that what I would call a stumble. Yeah.
The one where they say it's the landing on the twist. I like watch it. I'm like, that looks perfect. Like, very clearly cannot be a figure skating judge because he's like, yeah, they didn't quite land it. It's him like twist. She's twisting and he catches her. And if you know, something about the way he caught her is not exactly how you're supposed to catch her.
Yeah, it wasn't smooth.
Mm-hmm. But to me, to my like untrained eye, I can't tell the difference. So.
The fact remains that as you say, Grace, the mistake is not like, oh, automatic deduct points. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the judges are going to keep that into consideration. But if it's a very difficult thing that you're trying to do, the level of difficulty raises all the scores.
Yeah. So basically, on the technical merit, the United States, Poland, Canada, and Japan all rank a little bit lower, a 5.7 versus a 5.8 from everybody else. They get nearly perfect scores on presentation, except for Canada, Canada and Germany give them a 5.8. Jamie and David, who did not watch the performance, as you were saying, very interesting that they just chose to sort of, you know, let's focus on what we're doing. They go out there and, you know, this is a very memorable performance, especially for like this Canadian folks. But I just love the way the documentary, like, you know, tells the tale of this like beautiful love story. They talk about, the song they chose, is this American song. They're on American soil. So sort of playing into something. I love the journal saying like, that's not cheating. This is figure skating, you know, the idea that like you could pick a song, that you pick an American song that would be cheating, is hilarious, but they pull off this rather impressive performance. They, you know, sort of, middle towards the end, they pull off this maneuver that, you know, is the trickiest for them to perform, and they pull it off. And Jamie is like basically saying like, we've done it because everything else we're going to nail, which they do. It's a near perfect, at least, you know, I guess a near perfect. The scores are
a perfect
six. Right. But they get basically 5.8, 5.9s across the board. But the scandal of the episode then when five out of the nine judges give Russia the edge.
So a few things here. So first off, the announcer, like, I love how they had the broadcast and the announcer was like, throw that's a triple loop in the golden.
That's got to
like,
that's got to be the Canadian broadcast.
I mean, the crowd erupts too. It was like, like Sarah said, hopefully the crowd who's there and paying to do figures, they know what they're watching. And like everybody said, it seemed like that was a gold medal skate, which is why when the scores come up, they get second, people boo. You know, it was really interesting to see that because that's what it felt like. It was a setup. It was like, oh, everybody is expecting them to get the gold. But Grace, can you maybe go a little bit deeper into the scoring, like how the scoring truly works?
I know it's a 6-point system. I know that they don't use that system anymore.
Right.
And so it does seem, I'm not sure if the, so they also talk about the placement. But it does seem to just be like, I'm sure that it's just like your total score added up, but they do also then have the placement, which I'm not sure is whether that's what like the judges actually ranked you. Do you know, Sarah, if that's what the judges ranked you or if that just, you know, you ranked them, you gave them more points, so therefore you did place them higher?
Well, this
or unless there's a tie, maybe. Anyway.
Yeah, it seemed to me, and I would have liked just a touch more process here from the documentary, but it seemed to me that they get their points, but then the placement is then the judge's discretion is the wrong word. It's not simply you add up all your scores and whoever has the highest score wins. And I think this is where the scandal was able to happen because the four Eastern Bloc judges gave it to Russia. That was Russia, China, Poland, and Ukraine. And the four Westerns for the Canadians, Canada, US, Germany, and Japan. And it was the French judge who broke the tie for the Russians. So I would like to know whether it can't just be that you add up the points and whoever has the most points gets the gold. There must be this discretionary placement decision that's made.
Well, I'm also wondering, so like China gives the Russians a 5.8 and a 5.9 and then flips that for the Canadians, gives a 5.9 and a 5.8. But then, so because those scores are then tied, presumably the placement can then say, well, if it's an exact tie, I would give
Russia above Canada, whereas very clearly if Russia gave, you know, Russia gives a 5.8 and a 5.9 and then a 5.8 and a 5.8. So very clearly, just on the numbers alone, you presume that they would place Russia 1 and Canada 2. But I presume it's when there perhaps is a tie I was quickly trying to glance through the Wikipedia. It does not really tell me. It says you award two marks. I'm assuming the placement then comes when there's a tie. Is my very best guess, but I don't honestly know.
Yeah, okay. So now the focus is on Marie-Rene Lagunac, the French judge, who is the one that breaks the tie, if you want to look at it from east and west place. And now the skullduggery begins with late night calls to journalists, tears, confessions, retractions. Can one of you untangle all of that?
Well, I found it a little bit hard to believe that, like, we get most of this in like the last 20 minutes of the, like, basically less than 20 minutes of the episode. They're like, yep, so Russia wins, and then we're gonna figure out how it's all solved. And like, I guess the part of the thing that happens here, I think, with this episode is that certainly a decision is made to award Canada a gold medal as well, which I remember being very controversial at the time that they shared the gold medal. Jamie sort of talks about this in the moment, saying like, it's a little bittersweet to like stand on the podium with the people that, like, you know, she doesn't say this. She implies, she even says when they are standing on the silver medal podium that like, she was trying so hard to not look like she was being a bad sport.
Right.
Interesting. Name of the episode. I like points at the Leonardo DiCaprio at the screen. But they eventually are also awarded gold medals due to them finding that they believe that there's evidence of bribery, basically. And if the documentary seems to tell us that the biggest piece of evidence is there's evidence that as long as France will put Russia ahead in the pair skating, then Russia will put France ahead in ice dancing.
Yeah. Which they don't.
I also didn't look into this. I wonder whether that event happens afterwards and the immediate backlash of, like, because I do wonder, is there ever any investigation into this? If the Russians just have a better skate, if the performances are reversed, and, you know, France, like, you know, I'll put them first, like they were the best, you know, that it's just a safeguard. It's just a safeguard. And because it gets a little bit exposed in such this obvious way, that then I wonder if the ice dancing is later and Russia's like, well, we can't win, even though they did win anyway. So it's very interesting. But
so let me break this down a little bit, because this goes really fast. Like, all
it's
of this
really
goes
fast.
Really fast.
Yes.
So once they get awarded on the podium, like that day, it's like Russia gets gold, Canadians get silver. And, you know, Jamie says she's trying not to be a poor sport. The next night, that judge, Marie-Rene, whatever Sarah said, she starts talking to like another judge, like, oh my God, it was my fault. I pressured them.
To do it. Yep.
Yeah. Not only that, but the Canadian figure skaters are being told everywhere they go on all of the news platforms that, like, hey, you guys were robbed. Hey, you guys were robbed. Also, their PR guy is working 100 times because he says he's booking them on everything.
I saw it all. They were on the news, like, because they get their medal within 5 days of the competition happening. Like, they're still in Salt Lake City when they get their medal. And like, they were all over the place. The fact that they were like in America, like, I think does wonders for like this PR stuff there, you know, whatever. But like, to get them everywhere, that doesn't happen probably quite as much if like they're in Beijing.
It's important to note as well that the gold medal is not taken away from the Russians.
Right.
An additional gold medal is given to the Canadian pair. And when the presentation happens, the two women are holding hands, the two men are holding hands as they all four of them stand. So the Russians are there for the presentation. They don't just get it solo, which I thought was very much to do with front-facing, you know, reparations.
Well, they say as well that Galgo is the one to actually can the medal. And like, David's like, I was so annoyed that it was him, because he's the head of the figure skating committee. And he's like, this scandal happened under you. And like, the idea that you would have you come and do, even though, like, you know, you're not saying, yeah, the Canadians should have won. Canada doesn't, like, the thing for me that, like, it really doesn't matter
you know, but for me, the like very small thing that I always I think about with this is that like that moment of like, yeah, having the flag raised, singing the national anthem, like Jamie and David never really get that moment. You know, if you truly believe that they had the better performance, that they should have deserved one, they never really get that. Instead, they have to like sort of share this moment with somebody else, which, you know, it is what it is. But like, that's the thing that and so like, he's annoyed in that moment to be like, we're up here with them. And then like, you're going to come and give me my medal. Like, come on, like whatever.
That's why I want to get into this a little bit, because they got those two medals, rewarded. Fact check me on this, Grace, but it was like 11 days after your initial competition.
Something like that. Yeah.
Within that time frame, a whole quote unquote investigation happened. So Marie tells another judge that she was pressured. It gets out to the press. She then goes to the press and says, yes, I was pressured to vote for the Russians because of the French figure skating president, Didier, said that she needed to in order for, like you said, for Russia to place the ice dancing for France. High. And apparently Didier, cheating was not new at this point. There had already been several point scoring scandals under his watch.
Yes.
But because of this, it then got up to the FBI, because the FBI was watching all the PR stuff, the Salt Lake City FBI, the Utah FBI. And they were actually, I don't know if it was them, but somebody was tapping a Russian mobster's phone. And during a wiretap, they heard that the Russian mobster basically alluded to bribing the French judges, or being involved in this bribery scandal.
Yes.
So this then came back to who's the guy that that you said who had to give them the gold?
Didier Gale.
Yes. Both Didier and Marie were suspended, and that's when Canada and Russia shared the gold. So they really did all of this so quickly. In the meantime, Jamie and David were on Rosie. They were on the Tonight Show. They were like Grace said, because they were in the States, they were able to go to hit all of the big shows. And it really goes to show you was that an investigation? Like, what the FBI's, I feel like, was good. But then the figure skating dude who gave them the medals seemed kind of like, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. So our friend Bill McCausland is the FBI agent, a figure skating fan who was watching the figure skating. Uh-huh. So he was fascinated to be involved with this. And they are looking at, you know, Russian mob. Our friend Tamara tells us that there is no Russian mob.
Where are they with their glasses? I don't see them.
The investigation from the FBI, I think, is good and true, let us say. But the Figure Skating Association, the Olympic Committee, you know, as we saw with Icarus, to get any of these big international sporting organizations to change, to do a proper investigation, there was an idea of, oh, we will intend to start an investigation at some point in the future from the figure skaters. It's very strange. So I think what the upshot of the investigation was suspend Murray Wren, she'll never be able to judge ever again, and give a gold medal to the Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's the compromise. I'm not sure. I know that it's February 15th that they get the press conference, which basically says, okay, we're going to give them gold medals. And I'm not sure exactly when they get them, but I am trying to find, on the Wikipedia page, I'm not showing the date that the actual, figure skating competition was, but that's okay. It's all very, very quick.
It feels fast. It feels like they wanted it solved. They also, Didier Gage is also suspended. And Yelena is with us today saying, gold medals for everyone. Everyone can have a gold medal. World peace. Yeah. And I thought, yes, I mean, for her and Anton, as far as they knew, they won. And they stood on that number one spot and the Russian flag came down and the anthem was played. So they are damaged by this as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a great look. I mean, Russia is not in the year 2022 is also not, you know, far removed from Russian figure skating scandals, still participating in this day. Yeah, it seems like I feel like figure skating is, you know, there's something about it that feels like in the same world as sort of sometimes like soccer and things like that, where, yeah, there is just like a ton of a fair bit of like scandal in this little world that like you wouldn't really expect, I think, based on like, you know, the image that it presents. But therefore, like, you know, I think the obvious reason they say at the beginning of the episode, right, is that figure skating is art. It's both sport and art. And because the judging is subjective rather than objective, you know, that it leads itself open to scandal, to, you know, controversy and cheating. So yeah, it's a very, you know, the scandal this year was more so about performance enhancing, stuff, but which is not unusual to sports in itself. I thought the episode was fun. I think that there's like, you know, it's a 40-minute episode. I believe that there was a documentary released this year, Meddling, I think it's called. It's done by NBC and it's a 4-part, documentary series on this specific scandal. I might be
really
looking at that. Yeah, well, there's like a bunch of stuff. Jamie and David, I was actually kind of surprised this wasn't in here, you know, when I was talking, Sarah, about like that there's a little bit of like shades of gray, I think, especially with the people who would put in the villain category. Very clearly it's not shades of gray with the Canadians, like they're very clearly the good guys. I think like Elena is certainly the most interesting person in this story to me. They say at the end like they're not really sure if they're ever involved. She agrees to sit down and be in the interview, but like a big, you know, one of the other things that happened is like Jamie and David had like a pretty severe bout of the flu before the Olympics, and like so their ability to be able to perform, I think, was also in question because they were recovering from this flu. Like it was like, you know, are they gonna be able to be in tip-top shape if they like missed a few days, you know, almost you know, really selling the underdog story of our lovely little Canadian figure skaters, right? That's not really in there. It's not important to the scandal at all. Right. So it doesn't matter. It's more, you know, for like my, you know, history of like the story of these two people, it's important, but for this particular story it's not important. But you know, yeah, four parts in the NBC miniseries, so
maybe we'll find out about the scoring. And look, it has to be said that the four skaters all skated together in whatever it's called, Stars on Ice.
Yeah,
so it's the stuff swirling around these, you know, fairly young, driven athletes, very, very talented athletes. And they are just the still centers of all of these scandals and politics and so on. And so you see them particularly being, I don't want to say the word victim. Victim's not the right word, but right, through no fault of their own, they are the center of this. And Yelena is certainly, as she's with us today, very entertaining. And I think probably still living her best life.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought overall it was enjoyable. It was fun to sort of have, for me, to have this sort of nostalgic throwback to definitely this like scandalous period in Canadian sports history. I feel like it's a little bit overshadowed by some of the other accomplishments that Canada sort of accomplished at the time. But this to me was a big deal. So very, very happy to have you two join me for this episode. Anything we missed from the episode? Anything we should highlight?
No, I think we did a great job. And like you said, we will be reviewing a few more of the episodes. So if you want to hear our reviews, our recommendations, you can just hop over to Crime Scene, the Crime Scene podcast, and it'll be dropping this following week. So
cool. Let's play a little game. I like to, play games with my guests who come on, and I will, I'm very nice. You will not compete against each other. You can compete together.
Yeah.
Against each other. So as I said before, I do feel like sports is very, prone to scandal. Although perhaps, you know, there's not often judges, but there are referees and a lot of money involved in sports. So sports is not, not one to shy away from controversy, scandal. So I have a little, you know, scandal quiz for you. And what I like to do is I'll ask you a question. You can get 2 points if you can get the answer correct without the multiple choice. You can get 1 point if you request the multiple choice. So, yeah, and there's no real, you know, barrier bar to win. It's just, let's just see how you do. Sound good?
I'm scared to be on this side because usually I'm on the other side plotting with you, making quizzes for other people to show their asses during. But let's see how we go.
All right, let's start with ones that I think are easy. What sport had the Hand of God scandal?
Oh, soccer.
Yeah, soccer. Oh. Diego Maradona famously scored.
I could have even said Diego Maradona. There you go. He put his hand to a soccer ball, which you're not supposed to do, but then he said he didn't. It was the Hand of God.
Yeah, unless you're from Argentina, and then he definitely didn't touch the ball. I guess I don't know if Argentinians like believe or like, yeah, it's fine. He definitely touched the ball. It's okay though. We won the World Cup. Or if they're like, no, he never touched the ball. I guess I don't really know where they stand. But yes, known as the goal of the century.
I was just so excited.
That is the point of the game, is to get the questions right. So I think you're okay.
2 points for us. Yay. Okay,
2 points. Yay. What about this one? What was illegal about Danny Almonte's play in the 2001 Little League World Series?
Say it again. What was his age?
What was illegal about Danny Almonte's
His play? Age. Yeah. He was too old.
Yeah. He, from the Dominican Republic, he said he was 12. He was 14. What a cheater.
Scandalo.
Very scandalous. That was a big rumor in baseball for a while. These players would come from Dominican Republic and like they'd think that they had like
that's pretty good because I always saw like, you know, when they do this, I've always seen the spoofs of it in SNL. So it's always like the 30 like trying to play. So 14 versus 12, that's not too bad. It's still illegal. I get it, but it's not what I
imagine. Rules are rules. But it's not like he's like 25 and he's like,
right.
Yeah. Although sports is weird. I was just thinking like when I was looking at like Jamie Soleil and Dave Pelletier, they like retire after this Olympics and Jamie's like 25. Right. Imagine retiring from sports. Ash Barty, famous Australian, just retired at like 26.
We love Ash. We're all part of the Barty party. We absolutely love her. But I mean, the age thing is really interesting. I once heard a podcast, the great Radio Lab, and they were talking about if you are a Canadian hockey player, your birthday will be in January, February, or March, most likely.
Yes.
And the reason is that the whole year goes forward, but if you were born in December and you're small, you're in the same group as someone who is virtually a year older than you and is larger. And because of the nature of the game, I thought that was
really
interesting.
That is not just sports. I believe that statistically, no offense to anybody whose birthday is late in the year. Statistically, they say there are exceptions to rules, but that you're just much better off if you have a birthday earlier in the year, because again, you will have more time, like potentially at home, like learning things before you start school if you're born earlier in the year. I have a friend who is a teacher who is like when it's getting too late in the year, be like, well, can't try having a baby now, we'll have to wait for people. Like, I will not be having my baby in November, December. So, yeah,
well, here it's not uncommon to start children, particularly male children, in the following year, because you can do that. For these reasons.
Okay.
But 14 is a little bit, that's a little bit of imbalance there.
Yeah. Okay. What is Pete Rose banned from sports for?
Sports betting on baseball.
Okay.
Betting.
Can I give you the multiple choice? Cause I did write these. This one specifically is for you, Mari. You're correct. He did gamble on games. He betted on his own games. But my responses were, he admitted to using performance enhancing drugs. He gambled on games. He embezzled money from the team he coached, or he kept getting beat up by Kane.
Yes.
All of the above.
All of the above. Yeah. 2 points. The problem with some of these, like writing these sports scandal stuff, is that like sports is such a part of our culture, I think, that like it's hard to find sports scandals that are like not immediately. So many of them are like, did you know Tiger Woods like slept with a bunch of women? It's like, yeah, how can you write a question about that?
And I love, we'll probably talk about it more on true crime, but, crime scene. But I love the podcast, Sports Criminals.
Yes.
It's a great podcast that whenever I was like, when I had downtime from all of my other ones, it specifically just focused on sports related crimes.
Oh, cool.
And it was, and they'd be really short, like 30 or 40 minutes. And sometimes it'll be part one, part two, and they go in depth for different sports scandals. And then of course, like, 80% of it is just sports betting. Like most of it is sports
betting. It's mostly sports betting. Yeah. There's like, yeah, two things that people do. Yeah. It's like that, they point do shaving. Drugs and that, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they like cheat in the games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. What team was caught throwing the 1919 World Series in the infamous Black Sox scandal?
I'm going to need the multiple choice.
For you need the multiple,
can't we
the
just say
choice?
The Black Sox? Is that a team?
Don't say that. Let's get the multiple choice.
You want the multiple choice?
But do we get a free guess?
Yeah, I'll give you a free guess. I'm not going to tell you whether you get 2 points. So then it's the Boston Red Sox, the Chicago White Sox, the Baltimore Black Sox, or the New York Yankees.
I think it's the Chicago White Sox.
Then why is it the Black Sox scandal? I don't know anything about. Apparently, I'm going to a baseball game in like 3 weeks' time. I'm so excited.
You're actually going to
know anything about it.
Okay.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. I'm going to defer to Mari on that.
Mari is correct. 1 point. It is the Chicago White Sox. I think it's the Black Sox scandal because they were bad. So
they're bad.
Yeah.
I thought it was the White Sox, but I just wanted to hear the multiple choice again.
Yeah.
I think that was an episode of Sports Criminal.
Yeah, the eight players who were on the team who agreed to do it were all then banned for life, including the great Shoeless Joe Jackson. It's a great movie, Eight Men Out, a good baseball movie. Okay. Yeah, it's good. They threw the World Series to the Cincinnati Reds.
Oh, because gambling, of course.
Gambling, yeah. Yeah, because they were the favorites to win, and Or maybe the opposite. I can't remember.
Grace, was there never? There was never a team called the Black Sox. Right?
No.
Yeah.
There's a couple. There's weird. I don't even know the weird Sox teams because I was looking up like so weird many. Answers. There's like the Bowie Bay Sox, and there's like
Bowie. Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's a minor league around here.
It is a minor league team. Yeah.
Yes, around near where I live.
Yeah. All right. What is Rosie Ruiz famous for?
Oh, I don't know this one.
What country is Rosie Ruiz from?
I feel like that would give away.
Let's hear the multiple choice.
Did she use a blood capsule in a soccer game? Did she get caught betting on games in which she was the referee? Was she a boxer who removed padding from her gloves? Or did she cheat to win the Boston Marathon?
I like C or D, Mari.
I think so too. That's what I'm thinking. It's between C or D. I've listened to a marathon.
There is a marathon runner who cheated, who was a woman.
Yeah.
Whether it was Rosie Ruiz or not, I don't know. Let's say the marathon.
Well, let's go with D. Why not?
Correct.
Yes.
1 point. She famously drove in a car to the finish line and then was caught in 1980. She was 8 days later of her title. She did not. And she broke the record. I feel like she needs to be a little bit like, you gotta be a little closer, you know?
I feel like I can see the picture. I feel like I can see the picture.
She
too.
Is she's so like, happy crossing the finish line.
Like hanging on somebody or something like that. Did she take the tea or something like that? Did she take like the subway?
I feel like she might have taken a cat. But that sounds like a plot from a sitcom, maybe.
Yeah. There were twin brothers who ran as one in many ultra marathons. They were finally caught because so one would run half
and then go into a
place and the brother would come out dressed exactly the same, but they were finally caught because they had different watches.
I need to show you guys this image.
They caught her. So basically she had shaved 25 minutes off of her previous best time at the New York City Marathon 6 months
ago.
When asked by a reporter why she did not seem fatigued after the grueling race, she said, I got up with a lot of energy this morning, which I think is hilarious. And then everyone else was like, you don't really look that tired. And then she also got caught because she did not recall the students of Wesley College who traditionally cheer loudly for the first female runner as they passed the campus. She did not recall that she did. So,
that was such a good, what did I watch on her? Okay. I will figure this out and I'll make sure we put it on in our recommendations because I can't remember if I listened to a really good podcast on her or if I watched a really good documentary on her, but it was amazing. Like, just because of how, like, she had a history of doing stuff like this. It was really good. Yeah. Oh my God, I gotta figure it out.
Yeah. I was once pottering around my own home, minding my own business on a Sunday morning, and I got a call from the race director of the Sydney Harbour 10K. I had decided I had a bib, and I decided not to run. And I gave it to my running coach, and I said, "You better not do a really good time." And he said, "No, no, no, that's fine." Anyway, she rang me and she said, "Why are you in the top 10 women?" I said, "No." Because it wasn't me. She said, clearly. So we were fine.
No,
and I said, well, because they know my times and they know I'm not top 10 women.
Yeah, but you don't have to say clearly.
Well, they were cross. And so I rang my coach and I said, "What did you do?" And he said, "Oh, I thought I was going slowly." I went, no, you got like sixth place. So please don't do that again.
Yeah. All right, I have two more questions. What happened during the University of North Carolina scandal, as the basketball team scandal?
What happened?
Yeah, what happened?
They used ladders to climb up.
They would get a ladder out every time they did the basketball team. Yeah, that's I like that one.
Let's get the, I think, should I guess? I have a guess.
Yeah, take a guess. I'll give you 2 points if you get red.
Point shaving. It was point shaving.
Okay. So that is one of the multiple choice answers. Their players were cop shaving points. So that's not the right answer. They created fake classes to keep their athletes' grades up. They bribed players to come play for them, or the players laundered money for the university.
Ooh. Fake classes. And it's not point shaving?
Not point shaving.
It's normally always point shaving in college. Say it one more time.
So they created fake class to keep their athletes' grades up. They bribed the players to come play for them, or the players laundered money for the university.
I swear all of those could be it. Sarah, you got any, you want to guess?
Oh, I'd go for the fake classes.
That sounds good to me.
That is correct. Fake classes. Yeah. They just made them up and they were like, yeah, they're all passing. They're doing great.
They're passing. Introduction to money laundering.
Yeah. I will say the college sporting scandals is certainly one of the most filled sections of the Wikipedia page. And yeah, Murray, like all of the ones that I gave are obviously just like other universities who did that exact same thing. The University of Miami athletic scandal is that they were like bribing the players to come play.
Yes, I know that one.
So yeah, they're all real things, but that's what happened in North Carolina was fake classes. I just love it. I think it's great.
They do bribe players to a certain extent because they give them scholarships and you know, they want them to come and play, so they do a whole lot of legal, I'm sure, ways to entice, shall we say, rather than bribe, but it's the same thing.
Yes. Okay, last question.
You can't get to college any other way, so you come and play sport for us.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. What did Nelson Piquet Jr. do in a 2008 Formula One race that caused controversy? It's the last question.
He used the Halo device.
What?
What's the Halo?
Is that a guess? What are you?
You need to listen to nothing but Netflix.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to that one yet. I'm not gonna lie.
What did he do? Is it anything to do with the pit? Did he pull into the pit when he wasn't supposed to? Did he leave the pit when he wasn't supposed to? Did something happen in the pit?
I'm fine with taking the
Yeah, let's take the multiple choice.
All right, so that is not correct, but I would have given it to you if it was right, but I'll give you the multiple choice. Did he use illegal tires? Did he give the middle finger out the window of his car? Did he intentionally crash his car, or did he drive the whole race backwards?
What are these options?
Oh, he drove the whole race. He drove the whole race backwards.
Classic Mario Kart strategy. Yeah, just drive backwards.
Yeah. I don't think that's it, but let's go with it. Let's see.
No, the one question he did not drive his car backwards. He intentionally crashed his car into
that would have been the only one I would have said was not possible.
Why?
Yeah, he intentionally crashed his car. Because that person was likely to win, so he crashed his car. Yeah.
Oh, he crashed his car into somebody. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't make it any better, but
he caused a crash. So yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's it. So no points on that one. We got points on every other question. So it's 1, 2, 3, 5, 7, 9 points. That's pretty good. That might be our high score.
That was so fun.
How many questions were there?
There were seven.
Seven.
We got a whole lot of twos though.
got
6 points. How many points? Yeah, you got 6 points, and then you got 3 1-pointers. So
that's nine. Okay,
yeah. Nine.
I'll take
nine
that.
On 7 questions.
I thought there was a bit of Kalish math going on.
No, never. That was the quiz. You have talked a lot about your podcast Crime Scene, which I very much enjoy. Is there anything else you're up to? Where can people find you?
Well, they can find me on Post Show Recaps, just finishing off Bridgerton season 2 with a feedback show to come. And of course, the slow and continual burn of Our Flag Means Death. Hashtag renew Our Flag Means Death. We need a season 2.
Why won't they do it? They have to do it. You cover two shows. Today I saw that Our Flag Means Death continues to be the most streamed show on platforms, and Bridgerton became the most watched English show in Netflix history, beating Bridgerton season 1. So you're covering some streamable shows, and yet they will not renew Our Flag Means Death.
They, I'm sure they will renew it. But I had a wonderful time recapping it with Brooklyn Zed and with you, Grace. Yes. So it's time to, if you haven't watched it, what on earth are you doing with your life? Watch it, listen to us, and then we were so thrilled to have a very special episode where we had an interview with Vico Ortiz, who plays Jim.
Sort of make the comp sometimes that I feel like Our Flag Means Death, in the same way that like Ted Lasso showed up into the world and was like, what is this lovely, heartwarming little show? And I feel like Our Flag Means Death did very much the same thing, that it was like, this is going to be a silly pirate show, and it's just beautiful and it's lovely, and people mm-hmm. should watch it. So yeah. Murray, what are you up to? Where can people find you?
Okay, so currently on a hiatus with the Wrestling Room Wrap Up. Normally you can catch me and Matt Scott reviewing the highlights of the week in wrestling, but we are on a hiatus until probably about mid-May. So just go on ahead and follow me on Twitter at Mari Talks Too Much. That's two like the number two, and at Matt Scott GW, so you'll know when we come back. Of course, you can find me here on Post Show Recaps, covering Atlanta with the great Chappelle and LaTanya Starks. So each week we review season 3 of Atlanta and give our thoughts on the shenanigans, the deep think pieces of the third season of Atlanta. And then, of course, me and Sarah, if you like this episode, come and listen to us on Crime Scene on RHAP. So you can find us by going to robhasawebsite.com/crimefeed, where you can subscribe on all platforms to the Crime Scene podcast. You can also submit your suggestions and recommendations to us either on Twitter at Crime Scene RHAP. So CrimeSeenRHAP on Twitter, or you can send us an email to crimescenerhap@gmail.com. That's crime scene like SEEN. And that's when we will bring you True Crime Tuesdays. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you both so much for joining me. This was lovely. That is the interview, the segment with Murray and Sarah. Thanks so much for joining us this week. If you have sports or stories that you think we should be covering on the Off Speed podcast, let me know. You can send me a tweet or send me a DM on Twitter. I'm at HiFromGrace on Twitter. Anything I'm doing, anything I'm podcasting about, which is a fair bit at the moment. We're doing some Russian Doll coverage over on Post Show Recaps, covering Winning Time, the HBO Sunday night show about the Los Angeles Lakers, as well as doing weekly movie coverage with Ariel. All of that and more can be found over at postshowrecaps.com. And again, I'm at HiFromGrace from Twitter. Let me know what we should be covering. What should we be talking about? We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. A very special guest. Very excited to be chatting about Australian rules football. We are going to learn about the game, why it's popular, and get a little glimpse into Australian rules football, a sporting world that I know very little about. And presumably many of our listeners will be interested in getting a deep dive into the world of Australian rules football. So we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Until then, the podcast is over.